Today we're going to pick back up with our series on prayer, and particularly prayer in the Gospel of Luke, both Jesus' example of prayer and his teachings on prayer. So you can turn to Luke 18, and we'll read there in a few moments. You know, I've shared before that sometimes I think my dog Max is brilliant, and other times I think he's about as smart as a bag of hammers. There are things that he does because he's a Shetland sheepdog. He's a herding dog, and he does things because it's just been in his DNA from the time that he was born. But also, he's able to learn things. Sometimes he allows us to teach him things. And the latest thing that he learned is lay down. And now I know it should be lie down, but he's not too particular about grammar. So we say, but we needed to teach him lay down because there are times that he needs to calm down, like when Julia's trying to leave the house and he's trying to herd her back in the house. And same with Sue. He tries to just take control sometimes, or like when about 8 o'clock, or around 8 o'clock every night, he gets one treat and he gets really excited. And if he gets too excited, he can take your hand off. And so we need him to lay down and calm down and just, you know, chill for a minute. And so we taught him that, and he did learn it, but he did not want to learn it. In teaching him to lay down, I physically, like, laid him down and said, lay down. And then he stood back up, and I told him to lay down. And within a few minutes, he knew exactly what I meant, but he was not doing it. He was looking at me, and he had looked me right in the eyes. And at first, it's defiant, like, I am not laying down. And then I would keep saying, lay down. And the thing is, I had an ace in the hole. I had his one treat in my hand, and he loves that treat. And he could tell in a few minutes that I wasn't going to give it to him until he was willing to lie down. And so I kept saying, lay down, and he was still looking at me like, our relationship through the years, has it come to this? And then there were times he just wouldn't look at me. He would just kind of look away. And then it kind of went to more of a hurt, angry kind of a, like, you just love withholding, don't you? And then it was more like looking at me like, you're abusive. You have bad grammar, you know, that kind of stuff. But finally, he was like, I want that treat so much. He laid down, and now he does it almost right away. When I say lay down, he lays down even if I don't have a treat in my hand, because he's learned that. But you know what? And it just really took about 30 minutes one day to teach him that. But there are other things that he's learned that we didn't teach him. And one of those is in his old, he just turned 10, and in his old age, he has become quite a whiner. And he whines loud. And he started whining outside our bedroom door, like early in the morning. We already get up early with Julia in high school, but he was waking us up even earlier than we have to get up. And so, don't whine doesn't work. And so he now sleeps in our bedroom. And he lets us sleep a little later, which is great. And then when he hears, like, I usually get up without an alarm. I wake up early, and if I just move in the bed, he runs over there and he starts whining. And I'm like, dude, let me put on some shorts and flip-flops. This is not taking forever. And he'll just look at me, he'll go, mmm. And I go, shh. You know, he goes, shh. Shut up. You know, And I try to just, I try to go as quickly as I can and go let him out and get him food in the morning, because honestly, it drives me crazy. It's like, I love you, but your whining really, like, drives me crazy. But here's the deal. He's not ever going to quit. And why is he never going to quit? Because I give him what he whines for. I've trained him that eventually, even if I'm busy, if it's getting around 8 o'clock at night and he knows it's time for his treat, if he just whines enough, and he'll come up and he'll kind of nudge me with his nose. It's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, yeah, it's that time. And even if I'm busy, I'll stop and I'll go get it. And so no matter how much it's annoying, and how much that whining sound is like fingernails on a chalkboard, he's not going to stop, because he knows that that I usually will give him what he asks for. And you know, Jesus wanted his disciples, his first followers, to learn that same lesson. Luke 18, starting in verse 1. I'm going to read from the New Revised Standard Version. It says, "Then Jesus told them a parable about their need to pray always and not to lose heart. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, 'Grant me justice against my opponent.' For a while he refused, but later he said to himself, 'Though I have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her justice, so that she may not wear me out by continually coming.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he delay long in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And yet, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?' He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, 'God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, and even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income.' But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.' I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted." You know, Jesus tells two parables, and they're both about the character of God, but also about the character of his kingdom people, people who want to live under the reign of God. And these Jesus' parables can be tricky sometimes, because sometimes the hero is somebody that you wouldn't expect to be the hero. And in this case, it's an unjust judge that's kind of in the position of God. And so these parables would keep people, you know, off balance a little bit and going, where's Jesus going with this? But there's a widow here to teach us about the character of faith. You know, and this culture, even more than ours, widows had no voice, no power. And it says there's a widow. And I think Jesus intentionally picked someone who really wouldn't expect to have their case heard. You see, under their system, under their legal system, there were no police. There was not a district attorney that would prosecute somebody. It's every individual. It was the responsibility of individuals to go to a judge and convince the judge that their case was worthy of being heard. And so here's this person, this widow, who was essentially invisible, who comes to this judge, who, and even in his own words, says, listen, you want to know who I am? I'm the kind of guy who doesn't care about God, and I don't respect people. And this widow keeps coming and coming. Grant me justice. Grant me justice for my opponent. She was in a circumstance where it would have been so easy to throw up her hands, to become discouraged, to lose heart, to say, oh, what can I do? There's nothing I can do. But she keeps coming. She doesn't lose heart. And of course, the point is, if a rotten judge like that can be persuaded to do what is right by someone who pesters him day and night, how about the God who is the embodiment of justice? The God who is justice. The God who cares passionately about people without showing favoritism. That God will see that justice is done. That's good news. That's gospel. But we live in a world. Anybody watch the news lately? You're brave if you watch the news. Or just you're morbidly curious if you watch the news. There's so much bad news. And as we talked about last week, we saw videos from Baton Rouge and from outside Minneapolis of black men being killed by police, and we saw videos of five police officers being gunned down. This week we heard about somebody killing, at least, I haven't heard an update, but at least 75 people killed in France. And that's just on top of all the other things that have happened. And we live in a crazy world. We live in a broken world. There are many, many reasons to be discouraged. There are many reasons to lose heart. There are many reasons to throw up your hands and say, what can a person do? Especially say, what can one person do? Who am I? I don't have a voice. I can't make a difference. And Jesus says, listen, you people who have decided that you want to follow me, one thing I really want you to learn is that you should always pray and not lose heart. And because I want you to learn that, I want to tell you a story about a woman who had every reason to think there was nothing she could do. She had every reason to think she should just throw up her hands and accept things the way they are. And she was granted justice. Jesus is telling us, when you look around, and you don't have to look far to see all the reasons why you should be discouraged, you should let go of faith, you should throw up your hands, you should think there's nothing you can do. Remember the widow. Remember the widow who, and she was even going to an unjust judge. Who said, this woman is going to wear me out. Okay. He granted her justice. You know, it doesn't even say that she had a good case. We don't even know what her case was. And that's what a person should try to convince the judge of in this system. They had to lay out the details of their case, and then the judge would say, okay, that's worthy of coming before me. The judge went all the way to, I'm just going to give you what you're asking for. How much more will the God of justice, if we can imitate this widow and always pray and not lose heart, what will God do? Remember the widow in the face of all the reasons to lose heart. Don't lose heart. And here's the question that should be ringing in our ears, lingering in our ears and in our hearts and our minds. When the Son of Man comes, will he find faith? And what does faith look like? Well, here's one picture of faith. It's the widow who kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, asking for justice. And then Jesus tells another parable, which on the surface looks like worship. It's in the temple. Two men go up to the temple to pray. You say, oh, okay, well, this is a scene of, it's a religious scene, it's a scene of worship, but actually it turns out to be another lawsuit because the Pharisee made it one. He's coming before God as a judge. And I tell you, he had a really good case. The Pharisee comes before God and presents all the evidence for his own justification. He called it prayer, but he was really making a case. It was a legal proceeding here, right? He's done his homework. His case is airtight. He's going to wow the judge. And in his closing argument, he looks around as he's you know, really wanting to bring it home to God the judge. And he looks around and he sees this old tax collector over here. And he goes, God, thank you that I'm not like that guy. I fast twice a week. I tithe. You are really, really lucky to have me on your team, God. Meanwhile, the tax collector, he can't even bring himself to look toward heaven. He strikes his chest and he says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. We've got one man who is, he's a religious luminary in the community. Another man who is viewed with contempt. And maybe they would see the Pharisee as a man of great faith. The tax collector, a small faith, if any faith at all. But what mustard seed, maybe, of faith that he did have, what that small amount of faith that he had allowed him to do was to see through to the heart of a great God. And what that motivated him to do was to throw himself on the mercy of the court. You know, it can be hard to tell who God's people are in this crazy world. It can be hard to tell who the people are that have God's approval. You know, you can't really tell by looking to see who appears to have the power. You know, from a worldly sense, that's seen as having God's approval. If you've got power, then God must be on your side. This widow had just about zero power. And in these parables also, you really can't tell In the case of the Pharisee, by careful observance of all the details of Jewish law. Because this guy had it together. Again, his case was airtight. But when you're looking for people of faith, and faith moves God's heart. But when you're looking for faith, you can't look for it in terms of power. And you can't look for it necessarily in just religious activity. If you're trying to anticipate who will be vindicated by God, look for genuine humility and penitence. Ultimately, you're looking for people who are willing to cast themselves on the mercy of God. People who understand that God is their hope. You know, it says Jesus told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. It can be so easy to trust in ourselves. Until stuff happens. And then maybe sometimes we feel like, well, I have no other choice but to trust in God. You know, what is it about human nature that wants to make it a last resort? I guess there's nothing else we can do. Guess we have to pray. Is that really the only time we pray? What is it about us that it's not the first thing we do? Sometimes it's the last. But when Jesus is talking about prayer, and he was talking about faith, he says, listen, here's what God is looking for. People who will throw themselves on God's mercy. And just this simple prayer, mercy, Lord. God, I don't deserve this, but I need it. I'm powerless. I need you, God. There's such power in acknowledging that power. And I think about these apostles that are with Jesus, you know, and the circumstances. You know, I said, you know, we've got lots of bad news. Crazy things going on in the world. Really, the whole world's looking at the United States going, really crazy things happening in the United States. A really powerful point that Steve made last week was, you know, we think we have issues with our government. Think about the government that these people lived under. It was a conquering government that legally could just go and put people to death. Things that are being done today with bombs and guns and airplanes. And this past week, semi-trucks were being done with swords and spears and crosses and wild animals. And Jesus is teaching his followers to trust in God and teaching them to always pray and not give up. And then shortly after this, Jesus is arrested, tried, and killed. And on the third day, he's raised to life. And it says over a period of 40 days, he taught them about the kingdom. And then, Luke moves from his gospel to the book of Acts, and he says, well, what do these guys do next? Jesus is raised, and turn over to Acts chapter 1. We'll read there in a minute. It says they continued with Jesus for 40 days, and then all of a sudden Jesus was gone. And it says he ascended into heaven, and I have to say, the way I always envisioned this when I was a kid is that Jesus was standing there, and then he kind of went up, and he kept going higher and higher and higher, and he got smaller and smaller and smaller, and he went far away to wherever heaven is. But theologically, that's not sound, because if you can go further and further and further, and our universe is really, really big. But no matter how far you go in our universe, with the right technology, you could still go there. You just got to have a lot of gas and oxygen, stuff like that. But you could get there. But Jesus didn't go somewhere that you can get. He went into the heavens. It says they were standing there staring, the NIV says staring into the sky, but it's just like staring into the air, because Jesus had slipped into another dimension. He wasn't far away in this universe. He went to a different place. Which had to be pretty cool to see. But it also had to be terrifying for a number of reasons. One being, we've been on this crazy ride for about 3 to 5 years, but we've always had Jesus here, and now he's gone. He's like gone, gone. We faced difficult situations when we had Jesus. Now we're facing difficult situations with no Jesus. His physical presence is not here. We face danger with Jesus, and now we're facing danger without Jesus physically here. There's just a handful of us. What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to be waiting around till we receive power, whatever that means. He said we are going to be his witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, to the ends of the earth, whatever that means. I don't know if I'm up for this. I wonder if one of them said, well, remember that widow? Remember what Jesus taught us about her? He said, we should always pray and never give up. We should always pray and never lose heart. He said, we always need to hold on to our faith, and what God's looking for is not power. What God is looking for is not people who are confident of their own righteousness, that they obey the letter of the law and they work it out and they have this airtight argument for why they should be approved by God. What God is looking for is people who are willing to throw themselves on his mercy. So what did they do? Look in Acts chapter 1. Right after Jesus slips into the heavens. It says, then they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is near Jerusalem, a Sabbath day's journey away. When they had entered the city, they went to the room upstairs where they were staying. Peter and John and James and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James son of Alphaeus and Simon the Zealot, and Judas son of James. All these 11, Jesus is gone, Judas Iscariot is gone. These 11 guys, what did they do? All these were constantly devoting themselves to prayer, together with the women, including Mary, the mother of Jesus, as well as his brothers. they constantly devoted themselves to prayer. In the face of injustice, in the face of overwhelming circumstances, in the face of an uncertain future from the world's perspective, a world of prejudice, a world of injustice, a world of violence, a world of racism, a world of, you've watched the news. We can keep going, right? All these reasons to be discouraged and to lose heart. And Jesus says, remember the widow. He said, listen to the unjust judge. Remember the tax collector. What God is looking for is people who will throw themselves on his mercy. I thank God that his message to us, his good news to us today is not that we have to be people of immense power. I'm thankful that the good news that's coming to us today is not that we have to be people who obey the law to the smallest letter, that we have every I dotted and every T crossed, and we're perfectly obedient. God says, I'm looking over this broken world, and what I'm looking for is faith. I'm looking for people who will always pray and never give up. And in the face of what I think would have been very overwhelming circumstances, these 11 men, what do? It says they came together constantly in prayer. But not just the 11 guys, it says that they came together in prayer with the women. And we want to be people of prayer, but this isn't a guy thing, right? I think as we pray as a family of faith, as we pray as a community of faith, it's important for us to hear women's voices as well. And This is not a one-time thing. We spent some time praying last week, and we're going to spend a few minutes praying right now. I've asked just a few people to come and lead us in prayer. I'm going to ask Chuck Neely, if he would, to go first, and then Ken and Wendy, and then if Jim and Cindy would close us out. And we'll have one closing song. You guys can make your way up here. As we've been talking about, we want Cornerstone Church to be a house of prayer. And we've got plenty to pray about. Just I've asked these people to pray about whatever is on their heart. I think we need to be in deep, deep prayer, certainly through the election this year. But beyond that, we need to be in prayer about all the turmoil in our country and in our world. I just want to give, before I turn it over to them to pray, I'll give an update. Many of you, some of you may be aware of this, but last week we prayed for Evan Kinsey and Beth Heller, who left on Friday to go on a mission trip to work in an orphanage in Croatia. Something that was unfortunate for them is they had a stopover in Istanbul, Turkey, where there's a coup going on, and the airport closed down, and they've been stuck there. The FAA issued orders that there would be no flights coming from Turkey to the United States or from the United States to Turkey. But fortunately, they're trying to get from there to Croatia. I got an update right before I came up here, and Tim said they're at the gate waiting to board. They did get a flight to Croatia. So that's the answer to many prayers that have already been prayed, but I want to encourage us to continue to pray for them, for their safety, for their peace, and also just to pray for the good that they're going to do, the orphans that they're going to serve in Croatia when they get there. But I'd like Chuck to pray.